your workday may be done, but we're not.
This is The Six
on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
And The Game Nashville app.
That's right. You're listening to The Six right here on ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, and of course, streaming on The Game Nashville app. I'm Elijah Campbell, producer Darren Donick and Chase, back again to lead you through the 6 o'clock hour, leading up to the ESPN radio coverage of Game 5 between the Mavericks and the Warriors. Have a really good feeling the Warriors close that out. And of course, I can get into that game here in the final segment. We've got a nice show planned out for you tonight. I'm going to talk about the Titans' concerns I have, because I have a few big-time concerns, especially on the offensive side of the ball. Talk about quarterback tiers. It's officially that time, right? One of my favorite times of the sports talk radio season, where you got to get a little creative with your content, and I think that it's time. It's that time for quarterback tiers. Mike Tannenbaum released an article on the 33rdteam.com about some quarterback tiers, and boy, on Darren Donick and Chase today, we had some pretty good discussion about that. Darren and Willie had some thoughts, especially when it comes to comparing Kirk Cousins and Ryan Tannehill. I'll actually play that for you here in the show as well as give you my thoughts on the two of them, because I actually think they are pretty similar. But I wanted to start off with something that I kind of talked about yesterday, and that is my concerns with the Tennessee Titans offense. I've mentioned a ton of times on our programming here on 102.5 and 106.3 that the AFC is hard to keep up with right now in terms of keeping up with the stockpiling of weapons. The Raiders added to their stockpile of weapons, adding Devontae Adams to pair with Darren Waller on that offense with Hunter Renfrow, who's playing as well as he has the last few years. The Dolphins added Tyreek Hill, and now they look to be a team that can maybe contend with the Buffalo Bills in that division. The Broncos, who already had plenty of weapons but didn't have the quarterback to give those weapons the ball, upgraded the quarterback position in a big-time way by acquiring Russell Wilson, leading that division to have four quarterbacks in which Derek Carr might be the worst of all of them. And that is an impressive feat. A lot of teams in the AFC got better in that regard. The Tennessee Titans were the number one seed in the AFC after the regular season last year and had home field advantage throughout the playoffs. The offense wasn't as elite as it was a few years ago, but it was competent. It was good. You had a receiver who was normally a 1,000-yard receiver, missed a few games. You had the best running back in the NFL, and if he had been healthy for the entire season, he would have ran for about 2,000 yards again. He was on pace to maybe even break his own career high. Derrick Henry was having a fantastic season. But even without those guys, your offense was competent enough to be able to win the games you needed to be able to get to that number one seed and have that home field advantage. Well, it didn't turn out the way Titans fans hoped. They go one and done in the playoffs, and then every team in the AFC around them gets better. Shoot, even the team that beat them, the Cincinnati Bengals, upgraded the offensive line, which is the one thing that kept them, in my opinion, from winning the Super Bowl. All these teams are getting better, and I don't think the Titans did offensively, which is why my biggest concern is with them and the offense. The defense is fine. I have no worries about that. But coming into OTAs and when I start to think about the season ahead, I don't think this Titans offense is anywhere near good enough to push for an AFC title. Now, part of getting to the AFC championship game and winning the AFC and all that is obviously winning your division. First things first. That's the first step, is to win your division. And I was thinking about it yesterday. Titans and Colts, the clear two favorites in the AFC South. The Jags got better, don't get me wrong, even though they basically ruined the wide receiver market by overpaying for Christian Kirk. And they signed a tight end in Evan Ingram, who has been underwhelming in his career, especially given the expectations ahead of him from his time at Ole Miss. Hasn't really necessarily panned out the way that a lot of people thought his career would. But the Jags did get a little better. They beefed up the offensive line. They got better, but I don't think they're going to be able to contend for the division this year. And the Houston Texans are, quite frankly, the Houston Texans. Davis Mills had a nice completion to the season last year, but I'm not fully convinced they've done enough to contend for the division. So you have the Titans and the Colts. My biggest thing with the Titans are the questions on the outside, especially with the receivers. I think the receiver depth, and I covered this yesterday, is a problem. I think it's a big problem. I don't think you win the AFC or get close to it if you don't have depth at that position. And I'm not the only one that thinks this way. Adam Kaplan, SiriusXM, and an NFL insider has been covering the league forever. Talked to a lot of wide receiver coaches about the drafting of Treylon Burks. He has also talked to a lot of coaches in the league about what the Titans roster is looking like right now. And he has some concerns, too, with this Titans offense. And I thought he put it really well today about a lot of the question marks that surround him. And here's a little bit of what he had to say in terms of what gives him pause when it comes to the Tennessee Titans offense.
But when they traded away A.J. Brown, and of course it was during the draft, Treylon Burks, I could just tell you, mixed reviews. I'm pretty tight with a bunch of receivers coaches from around the NFL. I would say he was one of the most polarizing receivers for this draft because he's very gifted. He's long. You know, there's certain things from a gadget standpoint you can do with him, but he's completely different from A.J. Brown. Kyle Phillips is more of a slot receiver, who's pretty good, by the way. That's an interesting pick. And Robert Woods has come back from the ACL. I'd known for a while he'd be ready for training camp, and I like that he's getting out there. But let's face it, he's a 30-year-old receiver who's coming off an ACL injury. That would worry me. There's certain questions of their offensive line. So, yeah, you're right. I love the defense that J-Rod's put together, called by Shane Bowen, and Vrabel with assistance. But overall, you're right. You're exactly right. I have some questions with this team on offense.
I agree with Adam. I think the offensive question marks are something that is giving me so much pause in terms of generating expectations for this team that I think if you don't get 600-plus yards from Treylon Burks, and that's even a low estimation, right? I mean, like, good receivers in this league are getting 800 to 1,000 yards. I'm setting the bar, I think, relatively low. But if you don't get that or able to even reach that benchmark, and he can't be a reliable number two receiver, and you're leaning on Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, Des Fitzpatrick, dare I say it, Racy McMath, to be able to pick up the slack in those areas, you're not going to compete in the AFC, and I don't think you're going to win more than 9 games. I don't think if Treylon Burks, if he doesn't give you more than 600 yards receiving this year, I have a hard time being convinced that this team, as constructed on offense, wins more than 9 games. I know you're built around Derrick Henry, you're a run-based offense, but you can't just be that, because they were that when Marcus Mariota was the quarterback. And then when the switch to Tannehill happened, they picked up the passing game. Tannehill had the best years of his career. You saw this offense take off. You need to be able to have that element to your offense. If not, you're going to be stagnant. And Derrick Henry is no guarantee that he's going to be the 2,000-yard back he was before he got hurt. The Jones fracture, it's no joke, especially for a running back his size and with his usage. So when you look at the division, what I was getting to earlier was how they stack up against the Colts, because the Colts got better. I thought they had a fantastic draft. I think they had a move at quarterback that I don't think made them a lot better. I think it made them different. Matt Ryan, I wouldn't say, is a significant upgrade. He actually threw more interceptions than Carson Wentz. Almost doubled the interceptions Carson Wentz threw. It just so happens that the interceptions Carson Wentz throws are so laughable. Now, if you were counting stats as interceptions that made SportsCenter's not top 10, yeah, Carson Wentz leads the league. But Matt Ryan didn't have a great year last year. And as someone who watches a lot of NFC South football and has in the last couple of years, I can promise you, Matt Ryan isn't just the shoe-in better option than Carson Wentz. So consider that a lateral move. But they did get a little better. Their wide receiver depth is concerning because with no T.Y. Hilton, Hilton hasn't been signed yet. I think he might actually end up coming back. But Michael Pittman Jr., I think, is a better receiver right now than Robert Woods because, as Adam has said, and it's very well documented, Robert Woods is north of 30 and is coming off of an ACL injury. There's no guarantee that you're going to get number one wide receiver option out of him or production out of him. And I don't think you need him to be your number one. You need him to be a 1,000-plus yard receiver, especially if you're not going to get much from everybody else. I just don't know if I really rely on that. Now, What is Paris Campbell for the Colts? I don't know, because they're going to ask him to be the number two. And if I'm covering the Colts, I have the same concerns. If Paris Campbell can't get you 550 to 650 or more yards receiving, and he can't be a solid number two, and you're asking Alec Pierce to pick up that slack, you're in trouble. You're in a whole lot of trouble. I like Alec Pierce, their draft pick out of Cincinnati, wide receiver, Desmond Ridder's favorite target at Cincinnati. Fine receiver, really solid. But he's going to be asked to do a lot. And in terms of comparing wide receiving core, I think they're very similar. I think I would give the Colts the edge, though, just because Michael Pittman Jr. is that good. Running back edge, Jonathan Taylor versus Derrick Henry. I know it's been blasphemy in this market to compliment Jonathan Taylor, but it's going to be really hard not to give the Colts the edge there, because Jonathan Taylor is coming into this season healthier. Less tread on the tires. We'll see what there is from Derrick Henry. I don't want to make too many crazy declarations about Derrick Henry without seeing how he looks on the field, because the last time we did against the Bengals, he was clearly hobbled because he had screws in his right foot. But with that being said, it's kind of hard not to give the edge to the Colts right there. Offensive line, the Titans, it's a big, big question mark. A lot of youth. You don't know what you got out of Dylan Raidens yet. You don't know how much productivity is left in the tank for Taylor Lewan. You hope he stays healthy. He can be on the field. Nate Davis isn't at OTAs. Solid, even though I think he regressed a little bit last season. And you lost Roger Saffold. The Colts added some depth. They signed Dennis Kelly. Looks like he might be the backup behind Matt Pryor at left tackle, but Quentin Nelson's back. Ryan Kelly's back. Two really good offensive linemen. So you can make the case the Colts have a better offensive line. You can make a case that they have a better wide receiving core, or at least a better receiver than any of the Titans have. At tight end, Mo Alie-Cox and Jelani Woods. Jelani Woods, 6'7 tight end from Virginia. Interesting prospect. Mo Alie-Cox, former basketball player at VCU. That's tough. That's a good tight end group. I think it's a draw with the Titans, though. Austin Hooper was solid in Atlanta, but the last we saw of him, he underachieved with Cleveland. They drafted Chig Okonkwo, who I have high hopes for, but the Colts have high hopes for Jelani Woods. So it's a toss-up. I think tight end you can chalk up as a draw. The Colts have the advantage at offensive line, potentially wide receiver, and potentially running back. And if you get Matt Ryan of 3 or 4 years ago, you might just have an advantage at quarterback too. And if that's the case, with both these defenses being really good, we can go from a year in which the Titans beat the Colts twice to them losing to the Colts twice. That's going to be the biggest obstacle for the Titans to get in the playoffs, because it's them and Indianapolis in that division. And I think they're going to be vying for only one playoff spot in that division. Got a fun show here coming up, and coming up in the next segment, we'll play a little bit of one of the best conversations we had on Taron Donick and Chase today, going over Mike Tannenbaum's quarterback tiers. And there's a little bit of a disagreement between Willie and Darren today about the placement of Ryan Tannehill and whether or not he deserves to be ahead in terms of tiers of Minnesota Vikings quarterback Kirk Cousins. It was an excellent conversation. I'll let you hear that next, coming up here on The 6, ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. Welcome back into The 6 here on ESPN 102.5, The Game. As I alluded to before the last segment concluded, had a really good discussion on Taron Donick and Chase today. Darren McFarlane and Willie Donick were going over Mike Tannenbaum's QB tier list for the 33rd team. Interesting list there, and interesting results. One of those tiers had Kirk Cousins and Ryan Tannehill in the same tier, and it made for some pretty interesting discussion amongst the fellas. I'll go ahead and play that for you right here.
All right, start where you wanted to go to kind of wrap up this hour. We're talking about the 33rd team.
The 33rd team, to bring you on board, Mike Tannenbaum, the former GM, you see him on ESPN, he took a crack at tiering the starting quarterbacks, as many do during the offseason. Different approach than the one we have referred to the last 3 or 4 seasons, going back to when Marcus Mariota was being evaluated. The Athletic pools a bunch of experts, so to speak, scouts, coaches, etc. This is just one guy's opinion. He's got Ryan Tannehill in tier four with Kirk Cousins and Mac Jones. Tier three, Derek Carr and Kyler Murray. I will argue that Ryan Tannehill could be a tier three. I don't think I would put him above Derek Carr and Kyler Murray at this point. I think the ceiling for Carr and Murray, who are younger, is probably higher for those guys. But I would put Ryan Tannehill. Mac Jones is the tough one because he's so young. He just played 1 year, and he's played for the Patriots. It's a unique situation where he jumps in there, and then he's the quarterback from the start. But I don't think there's any doubt. I would not trade Ryan Tannehill for Kirk Cousins, would you? They're in the same tier on this thing.
You know how I feel about Kirk Cousins. So
yeah, Ryan Tannehill's better than Kirk Cousins. Would you trade him? Would you make that trade straight up? I don't think you would.
You're not really changing much. I mean, it's to me, you're changing for the same guy. I think.
Oh, I don't think so. Ryan Tannehill as a runner, as a leader, toughness, I think is just better. He brings you more.
Yeah,
I think
you're
it's not pretty clear.
Me to make the case for Kirk Cousins.
No, so. You're not. You well, yeah, that's why I would really challenge you if you were going to make that trade. I'm saying you would not make that trade.
No, but I don't think you're not. I don't think you're really gaining a whole lot. You're not changing really much. To me, they belong in the same tier. They do.
I would move Matt Ryan and Ryan Tannehill more into tier three.
Okay, so let me ask you something.
I think that's what you got to hope for Ryan Tannehill is he plays more clearly in tier three. The problem is what they said. They're elevated by the talent around them and show that when the talent is average. That's the issue with the Titans this year. What is around Ryan Tannehill? Because there's a lot of question marks.
Are you telling me if Ryan Tannehill was in Minnesota the last 2 years that his numbers will look the same as Kirk Cousins' numbers?
Well, he's a different kind of quarterback. He's gonna help you running the ball. It's a completely different type of offense. Kirk Cousins, the numbers end up looking pretty good, but yeah. The wins don't. He doesn't win.
I understand.
10-5, his best year ever was in 2019. 7-9, 8-8.
But the numbers are way more eye-popping than Ryan Tannehill.
Not obviously. Really. Not at all. Now, last year, that for sure, but the Ryan Tannehill's first season and a half, 2019 and 2020, his numbers were outstanding.
33 touchdowns and 7 picks last year is pretty darn good, and over 4,000 yards passing. It's pretty good, 4,200 yards.
For your fantasy team.
Yeah, well, or any team. I mean, numbers are numbers. I mean, that helps you.
No, it's when you do it. That's always been the issue with the Vikings fans is when the game's on the line. What happens? Ryan Tannehill's got a lot
right,
of fourth-quarter comebacks.
Do you think Ryan Tannehill's numbers would look just the same as Kirk Cousins if you swapped quarterbacks?
Ryan Tannehill had the same numbers 2 years ago. He had 33 touchdowns and, like, 7 interceptions.
Okay. The year before, he had Kirk Cousins had 35-13. So that's back-to-back years of 30-plus touchdowns and 7 and 13 picks.
And what are –
And
what are Kirk Cousins rushing?
4,200 yards.
What are Kirk Cousins rushing yards?
Okay, I'm asking
zero?
You, would his passing stats look the same?
It's a different offense. It's hard to answer that.
Well, Ryan
They're different
Tannehill
times of quarterbacks.
Would be in that offense. So would he look the same?
I think he could be more effective for the Vikings than Kirk Cousins. If I were the Vikings and I could do a do-over, I might take that chance. Kirk Cousins is mediocrity. He's steady. He's not great.
Right, but there's no proof that, and I know they have a good running back there, but he is hurt a lot. But you don't know if Ryan Tannehill doesn't have Derrick Henry. Does Ryan Tannehill, can he put up those type of numbers and can he lead? and offense. Can he put up big numbers without that bell cow?
He's got two division titles.
With a bell cow elite running back, the best running back in the league.
Yes, he's got division titles. He is elevated them.
With an elite running back, the best running back in the league.
Right. What is Dalvin Cook? Dalvin Cook is an elite running back.
Good, he is. He is very good, but
he's
also
elite.
Hurt.
He's elite.
Dalvin Cook is a top.
So was Derrick Henry last year.
But he's not Derrick Henry.
Okay. Derrick Henry missed half the season. Ryan Tannehill still got them the division title with all kinds of issues at wide receiver. You got him through there. What does Kirk Cousins do? He gets you to 8-8.
Yep. Look, I have a hard time.
He's a tier higher. That's by all I'm arguing. He's a tier higher than Kirk Cousins.
He's not. They're the same.
They're not the same. Are you kidding me?
They belong in the same tier.
No. If you're drafting for fantasy football, he's in the same tier. If you're trying to win football games, they're not in the same tier.
Well, I'm just going to disagree with you. I don't know why you would think that way. What based on
Kirk Cousins has been in the league for a long time. There's a lot of 8-8s, 7-9s in there.
Yeah, for a bad organization in Washington. You're going to count Washington? I mean, it's a bad organization.
What else do I have to go on?
Ryan Tannehill played for a bad organization in Miami. How did he look in Miami?
I'm saying
Miami and Washington are bad organizations.
Minnesota is not a bad organization. Kirk Cousins has been the quarterback for Minnesota. That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, but both of their successes are with better organizations.
They haven't had the same amount of success. Ryan Tannehill has had way more success than Kirk Cousins.
Way more success?
8-7-1, 10-5, 7-9, 8-8. That is Kirk Cousins with the Vikings. There was one year where they made the playoffs in there. The rest, they didn't make it. Ryan Tannehill has played in got his team to the playoffs all 3 years. They're 30-13 within the starters. There's no comparison.
Yeah, there's no way.
He's on a different tier.
No, that's not me. But you can. I'm not. I'm not willing to go there.
And do we even need to bring up rushing attack? It's not even close. Ryan Tannehill has had this unbelievable defense that has propped them up to be a winning team despite a bad offense. If you look at the 3 years combined, he's 30-13, and the team has won two division titles. They've gotten to the playoffs all 3 years. It's no comparison to Kirk Cousins.
I'm not convinced Ryan Tannehill's stats would be the same if he was in Minnesota. I'm just not convinced of it. So I'm a no on that.
Okay.
You want to put him a tier above? You can. I'm a no.
You want to crown him? I'm crowning him. I'm moving him to tier three.
Yeah, that's a no for me.
But Matt Ryan, I would also put equal or better than Kirk Cousins.
Matt Ryan is not a tier five.
Yes. So he is at least a tier four.
But they are who we thought they were.
Yes.
Look, honestly, these guys that we're talking about, they are. They are what we – I mean, there's really – they are what
okay.
we think.
Okay, now, here's another one. Derek Carr, is he tier three in your mind?
That's a tricky one because last year he was ridiculously good.
Ridiculously good?
Derek Carr?
23 touchdown passes and 14 interceptions is ridiculously good?
Oh, I guess, wait, was it the year before?
27 touchdown passes and 9 interceptions. That's not ridiculously good. They were 8-8.
Well, last year he threw for almost 5,000 yards, so that does count for something. And their offense wasn't
it means
great.
They were behind and had to throw a lot or
right.
couldn't
Did
run.
He have, well, give me all the great weapons he had last year with all the stuff that was going on
Look,
with him.
He was good. He was
they
good.
Had a lot of
they,
stuff
they
going on.
Didn't do
on.
Much.
First round picks getting cut in the middle of the season, like a lot of stuff. He doesn't have anywhere near the talent that Kirk Cousins and Ryan Tannehill had to throw to, especially Kirk Cousins. If Derek Carr had those weapons, that guy in the backfield, and those two receivers.
If he had an injured Julio Jones and an injured A.J. Brown.
5,000 yards throwing last year, what do you think his numbers would look like in Minnesota?
Look, I just think Tannehill is sort of alongside of Carr. Carr's a little younger. I think if you gave him more, I think you could get more. His ceiling is higher than Tannehill, but he hadn't really done it.
Good stuff there from Darren and Willie, as always. You can hear those guys from 10 to 2 on the weekdays. And that wasn't the only good discussion they had. I played a little bit of the Adam Kaplan clip from earlier. There's more where that came from. I'll go ahead and play the entire discussion with Adam. Always insightful, SiriusXM NFL host for them, and also just an NFL insider. Guy's been reporting on the league for a long time, has some really good intel, and dropped some really good nuggets today. We'll hear from Adam Kaplan on the other side as you're listening to The Six right here on ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Third segment here on The Six, ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game, The Game Nashville app. Good conversation in the last segment with Darren and Willie. And, of course, there was more. I tease more. I'm going to give you more. Adam Kaplan, SiriusXM, and longtime NFL insider, joined the show today to discuss the latest from around the NFL and, of course, get into his thoughts on the Titans and elaborate a little more on what concerns him about this Titans offense. Here's that conversation.
Now, Adam, thanks for doing this. Colin Kaepernick working out with the Raiders. How real is this? Could he possibly be the backup for Carr after not playing in the league since 2016?
Yeah, then the Seahawks brought him in for a visit. They didn't work him out. In fact, I remember talking to the Seahawks after that visit, and they just weren't sure then how much he would accept being a backup. But now, talking to people close to him, he knows he's a backup for the rest of his career. That's just the reality of it. And when you look at the Raiders situation, here's why they brought him in. So I'm told they actually want to sign Brian Hoyer at the start of free agency. Hoyer decided he did not want to move his family, so he's staying in New England. He re-signed with the Patriots. So they brought in Nick Mullins, who came off, I think, elbow surgery last year. He was with Eagles for a brief time, but he wasn't ready physically. They made the trade for Jarrett Stidham, but they're looking for an experienced backup. So what they do is, you know, they worked him out. They've got that practice tape in terms of working out. You have that. You tape all your workouts when you bring players in, and they can go from there. And that's, as I understand it, that's where it is. They have the tape, and they'll see if they want to proceed further.
I mean, you've been around this league for a long time. I mean, I know I'm just asking your opinion, but I mean, somebody gone that long, and I know we're just talking about a backup quarterback, but do you think he can really play at the level that it takes, you know, after 6 years?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's tough, no doubt about it. Being a quarterback, you have to get your timing back. But with Kaepernick, as I understand it, he's been really working out nonstop since he left the 49ers. After the 16th season, he hasn't really stopped working out with the hopes he'd come back. He had that stupid workout that the NFL put on a couple years ago, which was ridiculous. It was just hastily put together, and that was nonsense. But, no, my understanding is he's kept in tremendous shape. He feels that he's ready to go. But and you bring this up, the issue there is, if he ever comes back, is you need not weeks, you need months to get your timing back. Plus, he's going to be with players he hasn't worked with before and with coaches he hasn't worked with before. So, I give the Raiders credit. You know, Mark Davis, the owner, has been very open, like his father was, to bringing in different types of players. And with Kaepernick, you know, it's funny. I remember talking to a team that was looking into Kaepernick a couple years ago. And I said to them, I was like, guys, if you sign him as your backup, or he'll compete for a backup job, the circus, so-called circus atmosphere, drops after a day because he's a backup. That's just, everybody's going to want to talk to him. Every news outlet across the world will want to be there the first day. Once you get past the first day, he's just a backup, and then no one cares. So that's kind of where that is.
Yeah, you just got to get past that first wave. Good point.
Yeah.
And then it'll be fine. So Josh McDaniels is now the Raiders coach. That leaves an OC position wide open in New England. To my knowledge, Bill Belichick hasn't named an OC. Who's running the offense?
So a couple things here. The funny thing is Belichick has done this before. He actually called the plays. I think the first year Josh McDaniels left to become the Broncos head coach, it might have been 09 maybe, 09 or 10, I don't remember. But I just remember he was more or less calling the plays and heavily involved in the offense. So what I was told is after Joe Judge got fired and Belichick brought him in, he called some players on offense and said, "Hey, I'm going to be involved with you, including the quarterbacks." So what you know, we didn't know what that meant other than he was going to work with the quarterbacks, and that's actually what judges confirmed on the record to the reporters there. But we still don't know how it's going to work in terms of calling the plays. And Belichick, no matter who calls the plays, Bill's going to be heavily involved. The shame of it is there's so many good coaches out of work. I don't know why Bill won't do this, but when you've got a young quarterback, a first-round pick in Mac Jones, and he loses, don't forget, Josh McDaniels was not only the OC, he was the quarterback's coach.
Yep.
You lose both. That's a big blow. I'm glad you brought that up. I don't think people can make enough of that. Mac Jones may be smart, but missing the guy who developed him last year, that's going to be a problem.
No doubt. You're the perfect guy, Adam, to ask this question to, because we're trying to sit here in Nashville and figure out, you know, there feels like just one threat in the division, and that's the Colts. I mean, you know,
maybe the Jags
get better, but the Texans are the Texans. They're a long ways away. But we're trying to figure out, like, what is Matt Ryan truly an upgrade from Carson Wentz? Is it the same? Is it less? We're trying to figure out at this stage in his career, what is Matt Ryan in Indianapolis? So how would you answer that?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've talked to people about this from around the league as we look at, you know, all 32 teams and kind of where teams think they are and so forth. See, Matt Ryan, from a leadership standpoint, you can make the case. Okay, you can make the case that Carson Wentz played pretty well last season until the last two games, particularly the Jacksonville game when he was on the COVID list. It didn't come off until Sunday. So, I mean, he had no practice reps. Of course, that was going to be a disaster coming into it, and it was. But you know, from talking to the Colts, they thought he played fairly well, but they were not sold on his leadership, particularly the owner. The owner made the call there. I'm told within 48 hours after that Jacksonville game, he pretty much made the decision that Wentz would not be back. Chris Ballard, the GM, he was the one who brought him in along with Frank Reich. It was really Ballard's decision to make the trade with the Eagles. But in the end, the man who signs the paychecks wanted Wentz off the roster. And now this is three teams in 3 years for Wentz. This is kind of strange. But with Matt Ryan, he's obviously much older. They've got him by contract structure for 2 years. And he's super durable, where Carson Wentz is not. Wentz is more talented. But from a leadership standpoint and accountability standpoint, I mean, I'm just calling it like it is, and the way I know it, it's probably a better fit. And Nick Foles, ironically, is going to be the backup, and which is never would have happened if Carson Wentz was there, because Wentz didn't handle it well when the Eagles drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round, and he just feels other players are a threat, and it just was not going to work.
Well, with your ties and the people you know in Philadelphia, what do you hear about, like, the Wentz thing is so weird because, like you said, it really, if you take away, and I get it, it was a disaster. The two games, what was it, the Raiders and the Jags at the end of the year.
The Jags game, terrible.
Yeah,
right.
In particular. But the two games, and I know the Raiders game he wasn't supposed to play. He missed all week, and he was crap in that game. But other than that, like, his season was pretty good. But what is it about Wentz that teams are just like, yeah, get out of here?
If the best game he had in probably the last 3 years was the Monday night game at Baltimore. He and Lamar Jackson put on a show. He was incredible. Wentz was the old Wentz before the ACL injury in 2017. But the knock on him has been accountability and pointing the finger to himself and saying, hey, I have to be better. That it'll never be about talent with him. He's got the arm strength. He's still a decent athlete. He's a tough guy, by the way. He'll play through injury. That's never been a problem. But too many people have kind of pointed the finger at him in terms of take responsibility. That's been a problem. When an owner goes after, like, it's one thing for the GM, because Chris Ballard wears his heart on his sleeve. For the owner to do what he did, say what he said, was just shocking. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I knew going in that he wasn't happy with Wentz, but to go on the record and say what he said was just, it was really tough.
Yeah.
Really, really bad. So, to me, so that's it. To answer your question, it's accountability and leadership. He's got to be better with it. And quite frankly, look, it didn't work with his mentor, Frank Reich. That's a bad sign. But the Washington was desperate for a quarterback. Wentz could still play, by the way. He knows that division. It just so happens within the first 4 weeks, the Eagles are going to play Washington with Carson Wentz as the quarterback. We'll see. It's the one thing you could always turn your career around at quarterback. I've seen it happen a lot. You all know that. Everyone listening knows that. You could play quarterback to your late 30s and early to mid-40s in this business. But it's got to be about you being a better leader. If Wentz is a better leader, he's going to play in the league a long time.
We're talking to Adam Kaplan, NFL insider. You can catch him on Sirius XM, Fox Sports Radio. Adam, with your, again, your prism from where you sit, knowing what you know about the Eagles, give us your perspective on the A.J. Brown
Yeah.
And that trade. Were you shocked?
Yes. Shocked. Yeah. So I'm going to give you exactly what I know and then how I heard about it. So I do television for a company called Sports Grid. I was actually at the draft for them. And I was putting a lot of scoops out on the air, and I got a text from somebody. We just got A.J. Brown. I'm like, I had to see who it was. I'm like, I had to process it. Like, when you're getting something you're not expecting, and particularly you guys know this when you're doing radio or television, you have to have it, as is what I do for a living, I have to have an answer. And I know how much the Titans love A.J. Brown. I'm like, this makes no sense to me. I know they were negotiating a contract, and teams up to a week before that were told that he wasn't available. So I'm like, what the hell's going on here? Within 4 or 5 hours, I would find out kind of where the Titans were. Then I know John Robinson, the GM, went on the record and, you know, said, look, they were far away and they didn't think they could ever get there. But I was shocked, and I know how much he meant to the players and the front office, to the coaches. Teams don't walk away from players like this. I know they traded him and got decent value for him, but you guys know, following the team as you do, how important he was to the football team and how tough he was. And he's a big-time leader. As you know, I've heard he's a good Super 8 type personality. He's the kind of guy you want to lead your team, particularly the wide receiver room. It's just, it was shocking, to sum it up, to move the 40. I was shocked by it.
We had a great discussion in the aftermath of looking at the Eagles and their skill players when they won the championship, when they won the Super Bowl. They didn't have the 1,000-yard back or the 1,000-yard receiver. So it was interesting that they made the play for A.J. Brown. But did you think the contract, knowing the atmosphere for wide receivers, the market for wide receivers is changing some, do you think they overpaid a little bit, or do you think he'll be worth it?
No, it's worth it. The problem is, and the reason why, my understanding is, from multiple sources, the Titans made a choice. They had a contract structure in mind. They had a dollar amount in mind, and particularly because of his knee issue. You remember he had scopes two springs ago, on both knees. And that, to me, based on what I know, was going to be a problem for the Titans. You know, Amy Adams, who's, you know, it's her team. She's got to write the checks, and they have information, obviously. There are questions around the league. In fact, I know there are other teams involved about how long his career is going to be. Is it going to be 3 years? Is it going to be 6 years? I understand that. You have to be careful. This is the part about, you have to protect your club. I don't necessarily have to agree with it, or you don't have to agree with it, but the Titans had information which suggest there may be some risk in terms of how the contract is structured and how much fully guaranteed money at signing they wanted to give him. Now, the Eagles, it's not quite the $25 million a year that was reported. It's if you look at the real money, it's less than that. Still a very good contract. And there's some risk. Look, the Eagles could get out of it after 2 years, but they'll pay them a lot of money. But they believe this will transform the receiver room. See, they don't look at it like the 2017. The 2017 team, to be honest with you, talking to the Eagles before that season, they were not expecting Super Bowl. They were hoping to make the playoffs. Just sometimes you get a lead play from Carson Wentz. Nick Foles plays out of his mind for 2 games. Nobody saw that coming. Great coaching, by the way. It's seeming like every front office move the Eagles made that year worked. That never happens. It just all came together, and it happened. But they have Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown now, and they think they're really good in that receiver room. And don't forget, before we move on to the Titans, there's a couple things I want to talk to the Titans about. But the Eagles missed on Jalen Reagor. Looks like he doesn't look good. I mean, 2 years he hasn't done much. He was a first-rounder. He's probably better off playing somewhere else where he could revive his career. And then J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, who was the second rounder in 2019, a receiver, has been moved to tight end. So that's kind of where that's at.
All right. So, Adam, you sort of teased our audience a little bit. Your thoughts on the Titans. We just have been talking with the OTAs going on about how it's really interesting how the question marks have really shifted from the defensive side of the ball to the offensive side of the ball in about a year.
Yeah, it is fascinating because, look, Derrick Henry turns 28 in July. That means he's 28 in NFL years. You do worry, you know, this is his first major injury, though. You do worry with backs who accumulate so many carries and take on so much contact, how long they're going to last. We know the offense is always going to go through Derrick Henry when he gets there. But when they traded away A.J. Brown, of course, it was during the draft. Treylon Burks, I could just tell you, mixed reviews. I'm pretty tight with a bunch of receivers coaches from around the NFL. I would say he was one of the most polarizing receivers for this draft because he's very gifted. He's long. You know, there's certain things from a gadget standpoint you can do with him, but he's completely different from A.J. Brown. Kyle Phillips is more of a slot receiver, who's pretty good, by the way. That's an interesting pick. And Robert Woods has come back from the ACL. I'd known for a while he'd be ready for training camp, and I like that he's getting out there. But let's face it, he's a 30-year-old receiver who's coming off an ACL injury. That would worry me. There's certain questions of their offensive line. So, yeah, you're right. I love the defense that J-Rod's put together, called by Shane Bowen, and then Vrabel with assistance. But overall, you're right. You're exactly right. I have some questions with this team on offense.
So you like Kyle Phillips. You like that draft.
Yeah, I do. That's a very underrated draft pick. Fifth rounder of UCLA. Burks, we have to wait and see physically if he's going to be able to handle being a full-time starter at this level. It's just the rookie receivers tend to struggle more than they do well, but you got to be patient. I love the signing of Austin Hooper, very underrated. I know he's got a block, but this guy, remember, is no more as an athlete coming out of Stanford than a pass blocker, and now he's turned into more of a blocker as he had a block in Cleveland. So there, because Swain will be their wide tight end, Austin Hooper's going to catch the ball there for Tennessee.
Well, let's end with that, Adam. We're trying to figure out, is it more the Austin Hooper in Atlanta or more the Austin Hooper in Cleveland that the Titans got?
More Atlanta, yeah. He's going to catch the ball more. I could certainly see, because they're down in a pass target group, I could see certainly 55 to 60 catches in 17-game season, absolutely. Three and a half a game, sometimes more. Because look at it, right? Robert Woods, ACL injury, 30 years old. Burks, a rookie. Westbrook Akina is a tall slot receiver. Phillips really is a slot receiver. Fitzpatrick didn't work. He was cut, brought back. They don't have a lot of talent at wide receiver. So, and we know what this offense will look like. It'll still go through Henry. We know that. And by the way, Haskins, really underrated running back. A lot of teams I talked to really liked him. I like that pick to back up Henry.
Ooh, all right. We do too. We just had him on the show recently.
Power back. Yep.
Really like that. All right. Adam, good stuff as always. Appreciate it. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll certainly talk to you down the road.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks.
Big thanks to Adam Kaplan from SiriusXM NFL Radio for joining us here on Darren Donick and Chase today. And, of course, coming up to conclude this show of the six, it's time for picks. I'll give you some gambling picks for tonight's game between the Warriors and the Mavericks, as well as the Battle of Alberta. Does that series go to a close? I'll tell you on the other side. Listen to the six, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. That's right. You hear the Pink Floyd hit, Money. And that's what we're going to make you here in this last segment. We always save the best for last, and that is the gambling picks. Carolina Hurricanes and New York Rangers are already underway, but there is another game tonight. The Battle of Alberta, the Flames trailing 3-1. The team that I picked to win the Stanley Cup final is down 3-1. But if there's any team that can blow this lead, it quite possibly can be Mike Smith and the Edmonton Oilers. Despite Connor McDavid playing out of this world and Leon Draisaitl doing what Leon Draisaitl does and Evander Kane playing like he is capable of doing, despite all the antics. But for giving picks tonight, I like the Flames at home to at least push this thing to six, send it back to Edmonton. I'm not willing to give up on the Flames just yet. I believe the Markstrom goaltending is going to get a little better. I don't think they're going down without a fight. So take the Flames tonight. And then, of course, 8 o'clock tonight, coming up here in just an hour, Mavericks and Warriors. Mavericks are 6.5-point underdogs. Now, I like for them to at least give everything they got, but this Warriors team's too good, man. Warriors team is way too good, especially in closeout games at home, which is exactly what they have here tonight. I have a really good feeling the Warriors shut the door on the Mavs and cozy their way into the NBA Finals, where I think they play the Boston Celtics, who, if I got any game right last night, it was definitely that one. 1-1 last night. Let's do better tonight. So let's take the Warriors -6.5 and hammer the Flames on the money line to extend that series to six. That's all I got for you here. I'm Elijah Campbell. Coming up next, ESPN Radio's coverage of Game 5 between Golden State and Dallas. It's been real. It's been fun. It's been real fun. I'll talk to you again soon.